You ready for Basecamp Fitness's best deal yet? 7 days for $7. That's right, 7 days for $7. It's time to double down on your fitness goals and snag this offer before it's gone. Call or text Basecamp Fitness at 913-232-9770 or go to basecampfitness.com to learn more.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go.
Let's go.
We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go.
Let's go.
You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the zone
is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, a Monday edition of The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels. We head up until 2 o'clock. The next 4 hours, we've got you. A lot of stuff to get into and talk about today. It is draft week. Royals have four more games on this homestand against the Toronto Blue Jays starting today, wrapping up on Thursday, and then they will head to the NFL draft on Thursday night to hang out with the Chiefs and whoever is representing the Chiefs, and then they'll be there on Friday as well, so... very cool that Bobby Witt and the fellas will be representing the Chiefs there at the draft on Thursday night. That's what's going on, right? That's why they're flying to Detroit on Thursday?
Has to be.
What other reason would you be flying to Detroit on Thursday for?
Coney Island.
There it was. Okay, so that's what it is. So Okay, I thought it was for the draft. They have the weekend off. Everybody knows that after Thursday, they've got the weekend off. They don't play anybody. But they're flying to Detroit. That's odd. No, but it is sort of random, though, right, that the Royals are heading to Detroit for the draft. But they're also playing the Tigers, obviously, on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But that's how the week lines up. Draft coming up on Thursday. We will have the coverage for you right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB with Sarim Petro, Curtis Seabolt, Mark Bullrichter. We'll have the draft coverage on Thursday night. Yes, it is in Detroit, and we'll see what the Chiefs end up doing. Brett Veach talked on Friday. We played that for you live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB in the Zone. And he also talked with Kevin Harvick. He did a podcast with Kevin Harvick. I found that out over the weekend. So watch the podcast with Kevin Harvick, Happy Hour, Harvick's Happy Hour. So I've seen one episode of that. Seemed perfectly fine. And I found out that Brett Veach is a big-time sim racer in NASCAR. So now we know on the players that he misses on, it's because he's in his spare time doing the sim racing. When he hits on the players, then it's like, okay, now he's actually focused, ready to go. He's got a little Kyler Murray in him, you know, just a little Kyler Murray to his game. And he talked about it. He's like, when I have spare time, which isn't very often, but like he's like way into it as well. Like he was talking about, you know, he's like 10 laps in, like the back end's getting loose, and I can't. So I'm calling Clint Bowyer to help me fix and align my car so that these highly competitive races that he's going on with. There was some interesting things there in the if Brett Veach was struggling as a GM, that would be a big conversation, right? People would be talking about, hold on, this guy can't figure out free agency, can't figure out draft or trades, and he's a sim racer. He's spending his spare time, but also you do need to get away from work. You need to take some time to get away from work. That's right. Just wind down and do something that is a hobby that you enjoy from time to time.
I was not going to lie. When you said Kevin Harvick,
yeah.
Now this makes sense.
You know, you thought I meant Kevin Harvey?
No, I was like, what is he saying?
Ken Harvey?
The NASCAR driver?
Yeah.
Well, I was befuddled. I was like, why is he on a podcast with a NASCAR guy? And now it all
Veach is a big NASCAR fan.
Full circle.
He's a big NASCAR fan. I didn't realize that either. So he's a huge NASCAR fan. He's talking about drivers that he's friends with. He's talking about all the races he's gone to, you know, experiences he's had and things like that. So, yeah, it was an interesting podcast. But there were some things that came from that podcast, including him talking about DK Metcalf. Specifically talking about DK Metcalf. So we'll play some of the clips from Brett Veach today from Friday's show and his Zoom press conference, the pre-draft press conference that they have every year, in which he gives you everybody, you know, 1 through 221 apparently on his board, which was cool. Also, is Nick Jacobs going to take him up on the offer? He offered Nick Jacobs to come in. He, you know, you got to come in and see how I go through these, because Nick Jacobs asked how many people are on your board. And he answered, well, I knew somebody was going to ask me that. So I went and asked, and we have 221 players on our board. And he's like, and just how we rank these things, you got to come in, you know, just to see the process.
There.
Yeah, Nick. You just going to sit there? You going to slow play this thing? Nick, you going to get in there, man. Come on. I mean, Brett Veach, that is a legally binding verbal agreement, if you ask me. He invited, just show up and, hello, Brett. I'm here to go through your process of your board, 1 through 221.
And I'll have a follow-up question. Yeah, what time?
And Brad, I'll also have a follow-up for Brett Veach as we're hanging out here in this war room, this draft room. 913-912-4810 is the text line to join us to be a part of the show. 913-912-4810 if you want to weigh in and be a part of the conversation. So we'll talk some Chiefs today. We'll definitely talk some Royals today as well, as the Royals drop 2 of 3 to the Baltimore Orioles. They are now 2-4 this year against the Orioles. I do want to get into some of the conversation that people are having about, well, how good are the Royals because they beat up on the White Sox, and what have they done outside of just simply playing and going 5-1 against the White Sox? Well, I can tell you what they've done outside of that. It's 8-8 outside of the White Sox, which is fine. Those things happen, and you need to beat up on some bad teams. So we'll talk about that. And I also looked at other teams to see what they've done so far this year against sub 500 teams and teams that are over 500 to compare it to what the Royals are. It's easy to look at the Royals and go, all right, this team's 10-3 against sub 500 teams, and they're 3-6 against teams over 500. Okay. How does that relate to other teams that are winning in baseball? So we'll do that as well. 913-912-4810. Josh Kaiser joins us at noon, One Royal Way podcast. And we'll talk some Royals with him. Mick Schaefer at 1 o'clock, KSHB 41 Sports Director. Learn funniest and best. All right, so they dropped 2 of 3 to the Orioles, the Royals do. Is it odd that I come out of this series feeling like the offense really struggling, even though they scored 16 runs on Friday and Saturday? Is that it? It's weird, right? Does anybody else echo that sentiment? Because it almost felt like the 7-0 lead on Saturday, any offense that was almost got you there was going to be viewed in a way as sort of wasted runs, and you sort of put them aside. And then it's like, yeah, but they scored 0 yesterday when they were sort of in the game there and they had opportunities. Am I alone in feeling like they score 7 runs on Saturday, they score 9 on Friday, but yet there's still a feel that I have of, good God, this offense is really, really struggling and laboring.
How many times have I said the roller coaster?
3 times. I've been
take a drink.
Track.
This is now the take. This is now the take a drink for me.
Yeah, roller coaster.
It's who they are. You're not going to see many 4-run, 5-run games, in my opinion. You're not going to see a whole bunch of that. This is who they are. They're very streaky, very inconsistent. Fairly top heavy, which is kind of interesting to say. I mean, they get some professional at bats, if you will, from Adam Frazier, as more walks and strikeouts, but he's just weak contact. Yeah. Hunter Renfroe hasn't done much. He's not running into any balls. Yeah. Kyle Isabel is a black hole at the bottom of the lineup. Michael Garcia has been absolutely atrocious. So you're stuck with Bobby Witt, who's been great and who's a little bit on a colder stretch compared to his torrid start. You have Salvador Perez, who is apparently in his prime. We all knew that this is Salvi. This is
right.
His prime.
It's 28-year-old Salvi right here.
Vinny is absolutely raking. MJ Melendez was real hot,
come back to earth,
then
a
real
bit.
Cold, yeah. And then he's okay.
Hopefully water will find a level for him and somewhere in between to be a little more consistent rather than a 10 and a 2.
But
that, batting like a 10 and then batting like a 2.
But that's kind of what this offense is predicated on. He's either going to be a 10 or a 1. Mm-hmm. Hunter Renfroe is a 10 or a 1.
I would like him to be a 10 every once in a while just to show that he's got potential.
He's been
like
a 3 or a 1.
I was going to say, he's like a 3 or 4 or a 1.
But there's just so many inconsistencies with this lineup that you are going to get. And so that's, I was actually talking with him to an extent before the
Who's
show
him?
Started with Jack.
Okay.
Before the show started, I was talking with Jack, and I go, I don't know how to judge this series, where it's like, okay, they lost, but there's some positives.
See, that's how I am, too.
And also, there's just this glaring hole, and why I texted you, I go, I got to talk about Kyle Isabel, because it's unplayable right now.
It's very feast or famine, I would say. It's boom or bust with this offense, and it makes sense because you look at the top of the lineup, Garcia's hitting sub 200, then you have Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, Salvador Perez, all hitting their tail off right now. MJ, kind of in the in-between. He had a pretty good home series against Baltimore. and then it's a black hole, not just with Kyle Isbell right now at the bottom of the lineup. There's just not much. I would say Nelson Velasquez isn't a black hole, but you have, you know, Michael Massey's just back. When it's not Massey, Frazier's not hitting enough right now. Garrett Hampson's not hitting enough right now. Isbell's not hitting enough right now. And so that makes a lot of sense why when they play well, when the offense puts up seven or eight runs, everybody's hitting. But when there's that struggle like yesterday against a pitcher who's, let's be honest, not very good. Cole Irvin had a 6.75 ERA. But for some reason, it's those soft-throwing lefties that have always given the Royals problems. And right now, I just kind of feel like that's been the issue where you can't get even five guys on an off night, an off day, hitting well. When it's not going well, or those top three guys, Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny, Perez, when they're not hitting, you're not going to see the other guys hit, at least right now. It's early on, and you know you can be fortunate for those nine-run outputs. I mean, Friday night was a lot of fun. You know, there was a moment that things got close, and then Melendez, you know, put the game back out of reach. And then on Saturday, Cole Reagans gives up seven. He's out before the second inning. And Corbin Burns had a shutout going in the sixth inning. But then when they caught fire, it was like everybody that went up to the plate, you're like, they're probably getting on some way, somehow. Yesterday, I'm watching the game, I'm like, it's going to take an error. It's going to take a bleeder. It's going to take a mistake. And they never really had any good chance to take advantage in that game.
What makes it even more interesting and kind of just going to that, the only guys with hits yesterday, Bobby Witt was 1-for-4. Vinny was 1-for-4. Salvi had 2 walks.
5 walks in his last 3 games.
And MJ was 1-for-3. You obviously had Fermin and Isbell both, who had a hit. But, like, you're looking around at what happened. It was the same, basically, 3 guys. Again, they had their off games, but everyone else was just a black hole. Those guys' off games will at least get you on base once a game. The other dudes, you don't have that to fall back on.
The part that I look at, and you know, they win 9-4 on Friday night. And it just felt like there was such an opportunity in front of them, right? When you win on Friday and you get that game with Marsh on the mound, and you go, all right, now you got Reagans and Lugo the next couple of days. Win one of those and you took the series from the Orioles. And now you've split with the Orioles. You're 3-3 against a really good, talented team. If you can find a way to get one of these next two games where Lugo has been pitching great and going out there and getting a decision pretty much every time out, and that decision being a win, and Cole Reagans is your best. And then the second inning happens where he just can't get out of the inning, and two out hit, and like, well, this is the last guy, 2 strikes, 2 out hit, and then he's pulled, and somehow the Royals end up fighting their way back and making that thing a close game and having the tying run, you know, on base, the tying run at third, you know, like having that opportunity with Nelson Velasquez up there and bases loaded, down by 1, 2 outs. And so I don't want to dismiss Saturday. Yesterday sort of felt like one of those to where, you know, you just simply got beat. Those days are going to happen. The offense wasn't hitting. They get 2 runs here. They get a couple runs in this inning. They get another run there, and it's like, oh, that's 5-0. But the offense, it didn't feel like they were really going to get anything rolling. But you also didn't have just an avalanche like you saw on Saturday with the 7-0. And so they fought back. And I find myself battling like the angel and the devil on the shoulder of what's the meaning of Saturday? Like, what's the meaning of winning the way they did on Friday, battling back from 7-0 and having it 8-7 with bases loaded in the eighth inning, to where we are viewing this team differently. We are viewing this team in a level of, can they compete? Can they win the division? Can they be in contention or at least close to the hunt in August and September? But also, it's Major League Baseball, so moral victories, how quickly are those sort of thrown out the window? And that's where the angel and the devil's going. It's not a moral victory. If we're talking about this team being serious, if we're really saying this team is good enough, then don't fall behind 7-0. And battling back is nice, but you also had a bonehead play. You had a toot bland at third base by a guy who makes outs at the plate, and then when he gets on, decides to make an out as well. You have bases loaded and 2 outs, and you get a strikeout. That happens. And so it's like, that's the devil part of it. And the angel is, dude, this is like, we've been watching this team just get punked for a while against good teams. And this is a team that showed how they can play. And they've been in contention to take both series against the Orioles, which is a really good, really talented team. And I fight that from Saturday night specifically because I don't want to just have it all rainbows and sunshine. But down 7-0, the bullpen gives up two runs the rest of the game against the Orioles and at least allows the Royals to have an opportunity to fight back and get in there. Where do you guys fall on that? Because I'm more in the line of giving benefit of the doubt this early in this year when it's like, okay, it's kind of go time. All right, it's go time. They're, you know, 22 games into the season. This isn't game 123 where they are one game out of the Guardians and, oh, you came close to winning. That was fun. It's game 22 in a season where you go, okay, now it's time to see what this team can do.
Dog, they won 50 games last year.
Uh-huh.
This is a huge step in the right direction. If you come out of this just pissed off, that's on you.
Well, maybe the pissed off is how much or how excited you are for the season and how you feel like this team
sure.
could be.
And it's awesome, but I still think when you look at this roster, we're not sitting here going, oh, this is a 90-win team. This is a team that you hope competes and
gets to 500.
Gets to 500, yeah. Which might be enough to win the AL Central. They've done that. And again, that you mentioned the, you know, beating up on bad teams. That's what you're supposed to mm-hmm. do. You're going to probably go around 500, maybe just under against the elite teams. Baltimore is an elite team. They might be the best team in the AL. They're phenomenal, them and the Rangers. Like, it happens. Reagans has been good all season long. Do we all expect him to never have a blow-up game? He had one, and the mm-hmm. offense battled back. We would have seen him roll over and lose 13-0 in past years. I was at the game a few years ago, and they lost to the Rangers like 24-1. It was 110 degrees. All I left with was a burn. It was miserable. Like, this did not happen in this game against, again, one of the best top-to-bottom lineups in baseball. Again, yes, no moral victories. We're not handing out oranges post-game. But we can also have some nuance when talking about it.
You know, I think Sterling's exactly right with last year. This team only won 56 games. And, you know, winning is going to make you forget last year, previous years, a lot of the time. And, you know, early on this year, the Royals have been good enough where a lot of people have bought into, you know, not just are they good, we feel like they can win a division. But in baseball, of course, those games like Saturday, 7-run second innings, those games like Sunday, you lose 5-0. They're going to happen. I mean, right? We all thought the Dodgers were going to win 140 games. They were 12-11 going into yesterday. Mm-hmm. So good teams can lose games. I'm not saying the Dodgers and Royals are on the same level, but I do think there's an element to this where throughout 162, you're not going to see the Royals go from a 106-loss team to just beating really good teams easily. Now, Friday was very interesting because your five-starter, once again, shoves against one of the best lineups in baseball, and you go, well, this will be easy. Reagan's on the mound tomorrow, and then you have mm-hmm. Seth Lugo on Sunday. Hell, why not sweep this team? But it shows you a lot of the times that, and I thought this in the Minnesota series, I thought this in the first go-around with Baltimore, those teams are going to show you where you're at right now. It doesn't mean you're going to be there long-term. And I thought Vinny Pasquantino said it great in the postgame yesterday. He's like, you know, I wish I could come away and say we feel really proud of this series, but we felt like we should have taken this series. And the players are not looking at it as, well, come on, guys. We lost 106 last year. We're playing really good ball. I think they really look at themselves mm-hmm. as we're one of the better teams in the American League. We want to win this division, and we're not going to parade around, hey, we almost beat Baltimore on Saturday. That's a really good team. I think they felt like they could hang with them all six games. Now, next time you'd see Baltimore would be in the playoffs, but you know, you have to feel confident right now. You're 13-9. Baltimore's out of the way, right?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
do not have to see Baltimore again, maybe ever, whether you miss the playoffs or if Baltimore gets bounced by somebody else, you yeah. wouldn't have to worry about him. But, you know, honestly, I looked at the series last year. Baltimore humiliated. The Royals won one game, so I can't even believe they won one game. That series in Camden was probably the ugliest series I saw of that team. It was awful to watch. And, you know, this early on in a month that usually buries this team, I thought with the exception mm-hmm. of Sunday, they were right there every single time. And I'm not saying you celebrate moral victories, but I just don't walk away going, well, here we go again. Now they're yeah. going to lose, you know, five of their next six.
Yeah, I think there's a nuance, as Sterling said, to that, from the here we go again, this is the same old Royals, versus, hey, everything's great and they came close to winning, so we should all celebrate them coming close to winning. I think there is definitely conversation to have there. And the Vinny Pasquantino quote, I think, is perfect because it really doesn't matter what we think. You know, it doesn't matter what our perception is, our feeling is around this team. It matters what the feeling is in that clubhouse. And they come away going, dude, we gave away two different series to Baltimore. We gave away both series to Baltimore. We lost 6-4 where we gave up, what, four runs. We lost 4-3 where we gave up a couple of runs late. We had opportunities to win both of those games. That was in Baltimore. And then we had a seven, you know, burger put on us in the second inning, but we were right there. We had an opportunity there late in the game to come back and show that we're in, at least we're close to this particular team. And if this is one of the best teams in baseball and we feel like we let a couple series get away, then what does that say about us? It matters to me what's in the clubhouse, what's the feel in the clubhouse, because if they come away going, dude, we were close, that's cool. You know, because I think Royals of the past would be like, oh, man, we almost won that game. That's cool. That's pretty neat. But also, like, what did I do? You know, where's my batting average at? What's this? And it's easy for Vinny, who's going really well right now, to talk about the team aspect, the bigger picture of it all. But I found myself conflicted. I ended up sort of going to bed on Saturday night going, I feel pretty good. It's not necessarily celebrating a moral victory, but in putting it into perspective of where this team was last year, what we thought of this team this year, how good Baltimore is expected to be, and how good that freaking lineup is, you know, when they got guys that are batting almost 300 up and down the lineup, and you've got, you know, Royals lineup that has, you know, four guys batting 200 or below in it. It's you just look at that and it's like, well, there should be a bigger gap there, but there wasn't. There wasn't like a necessarily a bigger gap there between the two teams when the Royals had opportunities to win pretty much five of the six. Yesterday didn't feel like they had much of an opportunity to win. That was just one of those games where you lost. You go out there and you just lose that game. That team was better that day, and you get ready for the next series.
Where do you land right now on Seth Lugo? Because we talked with Les Norman last week. We tried to – the underlying numbers have not been in any sort of – collaboration with what the actual numbers have been put up. Again, what matters are the real numbers, right? Hypothetical numbers don't matter as much when you keep putting up real numbers. But at some point, it can be a good view look ahead of, okay, is this sustainable? Now, again, Lugo, the numbers last night aren't horrendous. Was it 5 1/3, 4 runs given up?
4 runs, yeah.
But dude was getting shelled. Garrett Hampson saved him on that one to center field. That was phenomenal. Hunter Renfrow actually saved a run or two with a sliding catch and then proceeded to, the following inning, take a bad route that I think he probably could have made a play. But again, that ball was also torched. I'm sitting here going, is the other shoe going to fall for Seth Lugo? Because it does seem like he's given up a lot of hard-hit contact.
I don't think he's a guy that had a 1 ERA. I also don't think he's a 5-inning, 4-earned run guy either. So I think yesterday is probably the, I shouldn't say the bottom, because Cole Reagans gave up 7 runs in 2 innings, but I think yesterday is below sort of the water level for Seth Lugo, where the previous 4 starts is the top of the mountain for Seth Lugo, because he recorded 16 outs yesterday and only 1 strikeout. That's difficult to do, especially against that lineup, and to get out of there without getting hit a run and giving up damage.
I think the only problem you can look at with Seth Lugo is that he doesn't strike out a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. So when you face a lineup as loaded as that, you unfortunately are going to need to be able to strike guys out. And even, you know, Cole Reagan's a strikeout pitcher, gave up 7 runs in one inning. I mean, you can put into perspective that Baltimore lineup. I mean, the number 7 and 8 hitter hit, you combine 830 feet of home runs and back-to-back, right? It just is a lineup that is tough for everybody.
7 and 8 hitters batting 370 and 333.
I mean, there's no let-up, right? And I think I look at it and I go, when you have – there was a leadoff triple. Now, they got out of it. But anytime there's a leadoff triple and you look at the options you have out there, like Seth Lugo is not going to be the guy that just says, all right, I'm coming straight at you, striking out two, getting a pop-up. Now, he got out of it. A little bit of luck involved there. There was a hard hit ball to second base. There was a pop up there. You know, they had some good fortune there. Whereas against Baltimore, if you've got a guy on second, nobody out, that run's probably coming in most of the time if you can't strike guys out. But Seth Lugo last year had 17 quality starts and 26 of his starts all year. So I do think that's closer to what you're going to get. When he faces a lesser lineup than that, which I rank all the lineups in baseball, there's probably 29 worse lineups out there than what he'll see. That might have been the toughest lineup that Marsh, Reagans, and Lugo will see all season long. And that I'm putting them up against the Dodgers. I'm putting them up against Atlanta. right now, it's just, it's so loaded right there. And for Lugo, I'm not overly concerned. The same, I'm not overly concerned for Reagans, because sometimes you're not going to have your best stuff. And I didn't think Lugo had terrible stuff yesterday. You just, when you can't put them away,
yeah,
they're going to put one ball in play at 112 miles an hour. And sometimes the ball's going to get wet in the fountains.
14 strikeouts in 31 innings this year. Last year was 140 strikeouts in 146. So again, not necessarily.
So it's less this year.
Decent last year, but he's not a strikeout pitcher. What does help him is he's, again, a lot of those have been solo shots or two run at
and
the most.
He gets a lot of soft contact. That's,
a lot
that's
of soft contact.
That's what he's doing. And the Astros don't have a terrible lineup. They've got a pretty good lineup, and he went six innings and gave up only two earned runs against that team. But, yeah, the strikeouts, if you're not striking guys out against that lineup like the Orioles, it's going to be difficult. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. I do want to look at the Royals versus the teams that are above 500, sub 500, and then I looked at four other teams, just sort of grabbing some teams from the American League, two others in the Central, and a couple from the East that I looked at to see how that compares to the Royals when we have the conversation of, okay, well, how good are they because they're 10-3 against sub 500 teams? Okay, what are other teams doing? We'll do that next. All right, we'll talk some Chiefs coming up at 11 o'clock. Brett Veach talking on Friday. You heard that right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And also he talked with Kevin Harvick, the Harvick's Happy Hour podcast, where a clip going around of him talking about DK Metcalf and saying that the biggest mistake of my life is Mecole Hardman on this team. No, that's not what he said. That's not what he said. Fans would have loved for him to say that, but that's not what he said. So we'll hear that clip as well. 913-912-4810 is the text line to join us. I want to talk about the Royals and the record against sub 500 teams and teams over 500, and then look at other teams and just see how they compare to it. Maybe it's better, maybe it's worse, maybe they're sort of where they should be in Major League Baseball. So looking at the Royals against teams that are sub 500, they are 10-3 on the season. Against teams above 500, they are 3-6. On the season. That includes the Mets, the Orioles, the Orioles. So one series against the Mets and then the six games against the Orioles. They've won, they've lost all three of those series. They haven't been swept, but they went 1-2 in all three of those series. So they're 3-6. The other three teams I looked, or four, I looked at four teams. So I'll do Detroit since it's one of the teams that's below them. All right. So Detroit is 8-5 against teams that are below 500. And they're 4-5 against teams that are 500 or above. So they also have a losing record. They're 4-5, Royals are 3-6. But the Royals are better against the sub 500 teams. Now let's look at teams that are a better or ahead of the Royals. Baltimore. Baltimore is 5-1 against teams that are sub 500. They're 5-1. They're 9-6 against teams that are above 500. They're still a 9-6 team when they're playing teams that are above 500. Now
they're on the AL East. Every team's above 500.
That's right. That's right. They would be 5-4, right? Because they've got four wins against the Royals and just two losses. They'd be 5-4. They're 5-4 against teams above 500, not named the Royals. But they're 9-6 against teams that are above 500 because the Royals are. They're 13-9. So they count. So Baltimore, pretty good record against teams that are above 500. Cleveland, we mentioned the Royals are 10-3 against teams that are below 500. Cleveland is 10-1 against teams that are below 500. But to their credit, they're 6-4 against teams that are above 500. They lost the series to the Yankees. They won one game in that three-game set. And then they took 2 of 3 from Seattle. And they took 3 of 4 from Boston. So, I mean, that's not any, you don't go into Boston and win 3 of 4 and get lucky doing it. So Cleveland has shown that they're a good enough team. They're not just eating on scrubby teams, and that's why they've got the three-game lead in the division right now. Taking 3 of 4 from Boston, taking 2 of 3 from the Mariners, and finding a way to win 1 of 2 in New York. And then One thing that stood out to me was that Baltimore swept Boston, and Cleveland took 3 of 4 from Boston. So I'm like, all right, so what's Boston then? Because they're 13-10, so they're above 500. So Boston against sub-500 teams, 7-2, and against teams that are 500 or above are 6-8. So they're a little bit like the Royals. Their you know, profile is a little bit Royals-esque. 7-2 against sub-500, 6-8 against teams that are 500 or above, and they are 1-6 against the Guardians and Orioles combined, or the Red Sox. And they sit 13-10. Now, maybe people in Boston are going, well, this team's only beating up on bad teams, and that's, you know, they're not good enough, especially when you're looking at what the Yankees are doing. So if you're in Boston, that's probably an issue right now because they've been awesome. And the Yankees are beating everybody. Sub-500, above-500, doesn't matter. There's no difference between that. But I think what we're also seeing, though, is the Royals might be a little more extreme example of what, you know, Cleveland's 10-1 against sub-500, but they're also 6-4 against above 500. Baltimore's 5-1 against sub-500, but they're also 9-6 against teams above 500.
I think Boston's actually a really good comp. They I think, struggled a little bit last year. They tried to rebuild a little bit, if you will. They've had a lot of positives with the pitching staff, like Cutter Crawford, who's on the IL right
it's Qatar,
now.
Qatar Crawford.
Qatar. Well, he's on my fantasy baseball team. I was like, wow, okay. He's on my fantasy baseball team. I should know. But like, he's got a .66 ERA.
I don't think Sterling got the joke.
Qatar, yes. The country.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. Okay. Great.
Brian Bello. You know, he's been great. He's been their young ace, if you will. He's taken that next step. Mm-hmm. Tanner Houck is a 1.35. Yeah. Garrett Whitlock, 1.96. You know, I think they're a little bit Royals-esque where they might be outperforming a little bit with the pitching staff where they currently are. They've had a little bit of bullpen issues as well. And then offensively, you know, Rafael Devers is still in a little bit of a slump. Tyler O'Neill has been actually incredible. Mm-hmm. So if you want to talk about a veteran signing that.
Is he back from that collision in left field? Is he back yet? Because I know he left the game and missed a couple games.
I don't know if he is back at this point.
He's their Hunter Renfro.
Yeah.
He's their Hunter Renfro. Renfro was hitting.
I'd love for.
The Royals were interested in O'Neill, too. I think they were one of the finalists, and then Boston, I guess, gave him more money.
But nice. Tristan Casas, whatever his last name is, he's, I think, a little bit banged up right now, but he's their Vinny Pascantino to an extent, young first baseman who absolutely rakes. I think if you want to look at a comp this year and try and say, where do the Royals stack up as far as their, again, rebuild, I think Boston is a really good comparison based on the type of players they both possess.
The unfortunate part for Boston, too, is they play in the AL East, right?
Correct. Yeah,
they're dealing with New York, they're dealing with Baltimore, and they got to worry about Toronto and Tampa Bay. Boston is, I would say by definition, the worst team in that division, whereas if they were in the AL Central, right, they're right up there with the Royals and the Guardians.
The right now.
I do think with the Guardians, they are a team that is always, it just feels like they've always given the Royals problems. Even when the Royals in 14-15, it felt like Cleveland was that team that just was a thorn in their side. And this year, I am curious how long they can take this, because I don't want to, you know, poke fun at them for not playing good competition, because the Royals have played the White Sox 6 times, and the Guardians have played the White Sox and the A's 6 times. So 9 of their games this year have been against really bad teams. But as you mentioned, they played the Yankees. They played Boston and Fenway. They get Boston now in Cleveland this coming week, and they've already built, you know, a 3-game lead in this division if you're into April scoreboard watching. But I do think you feel, if you are the Royals right now, I think you feel good that Cleveland is the team ahead of you instead of somebody like Minnesota. I think you look at Minnesota now 8 games back, I think, of Cleveland.
5 games behind the Royals are 5 games clear of the Twins right now.
If it was Minnesota leading this division, I'd go, okay, that was the team that was supposed to win this division, and they are still leading it. And it shows that they're going to go the distance here. Cleveland, though they have really exceeded expectations like the Royals have, like Detroit has, you've got that unknown of they could always fall off. They lost Shane Bieber. How long is that rotation going to be able to carry? How long can this offense play this well? Josh Naylor, you have Andrés Giménez, you've got Stephen Kwan's really good, but Jose Ramirez, of course, and then you have Bo Naylor. I mean, there's a lot of guys. Will Brennan, local kid here, went to Blue Valley and then K-State. Like, they've got some guys, at times like the Royals, that are maybe overachieving their numbers, but 16-6 is 16-6. But whereas Boston is 13-10, one or half a game less or worse than the Royals, I think that the worst team in the AL East, where the Royals right now are seen as the second best team in the Central with a little bit better record.
Yeah, the Shane Bieber thing is going to be impactful because you're talking about 28 starts this season that he's not going to have. Mm-hmm. He started 2 games, and if you're looking at a 30, you know, starts for the season for a guy like Shane Bieber, and just to tell you how the start he was off to in the two games that he pitched in, 12 total innings, 20 Ks, one walk for Shane Bieber.
Is that good, Jason?
No earned runs. No earned runs. He had 11 total base runners in those 12 innings and 20 Ks for Shane Bieber. It's 28 games that you won't have out there through the course of the season that he would have been on the mound for the Guardians. That's crucial, but it doesn't mean the Royals won't have that happen to them at some point this year. It's happening early to the Guardians with Shane Bieber, and it sucks. It goes along with all the conversations we were having about Strider and then Bieber and Yuri Perez and just the different guys that are going under the knife. Although Spencer Strider, turns out he didn't have Tommy John, that they went in to repair the UCL, but it was just a bone that was in there that was messing things up. He's still out for the season, but they think he's going to be fine to start next year, which is weird. It's like you've got structural damage to the UCL. We go in there and go, oh, no, you don't. Actually, you don't. It's just this bone that's pushing against it. Wouldn't the MRI, like, I don't know. I'm not
X-rays?
A doctor. Like, I'm not a doctor.
The second opinion.
You know,
I'm not a doctor.
Two
I don't,
wrong opinions.
You know how terrifying it would be if you, like, go in, like, this dude's elbow is just open. You're like, wow, we blinked up. We were wrong.
Just going to sew this back up. You're good to go. Once this suture heals, you're back out there. You know what? 15-day IL for this guy is ready to go. But he still had to have that taken out. Like, there was some issues there in his elbow. So, like, I don't even know what's going on there with that. But, like, losing Bieber is significant. And if the Royals can stay healthy, that would be awesome. It's not likely to happen because the Royals starting five, you're probably going to need at least three more guys in the minors for starters that can step up. Or maybe not even in minors. Maybe Jordan Lyles is the first guy off the bench that you throw back into the starting rotation if somebody goes down. And then you start to look deeper into the minors and you know, find some guys that are deeper as in like to AAA, not deeper into single A or anything like that, but deeper into your depth.
You mean the guy that has a zero ERA?
That's right. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, baby.
That's what I'm talking about. You know who doesn't have a zero ERA?
Back.
Cole Reagans doesn't have a zero ERA. You know who does?
ERA in the rotation, yep, by you know the way.
Jordan Lyles, zero ERA. I'm just saying, those are straight facts, homie. That's what
that's
those
not
are.
Fiction.
No.
That's fact.
Fact, not fact. Fiction. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and maybe fact or fiction on what they do with Kyle Isbell. We'll do that next. All right, but on Monday edition of The Zone, we'll talk some Chiefs coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. As we wrap up this hour, talked a lot of Royals here. Kyle Isbell, 186, getting on base at 213, but he is slugging 254. Oh, wait, that's not his on. Oh, that's a slugging, 254, yeah. That's not his on base percentage. Isn't that his batting average? 254 is not. It's a slugging percentage. But he is OPSing at 467, so that's good if you're into that sort of thing. When do they eject? If it keeps up like this, I mean, obviously, if it changes, they don't eject, but. They love his defense. I mean, you heard J.J. Piccolo in the offseason say this was an evaluation season. We wanted to see if Bobby Witt can play short. We wanted to see if Kyle Isbell can stick in center. It's odd that that was the second thing they were looking for last year. That stood out to me. But the guy's OPSing at 467. He's getting on base at 213. You can't play defense nearly good enough to make up for that big of a black hole.
Dog, his career on base percentage is .276.
So he's struggling this year. He's playing under. So it's only going to get better.
It's like not even
that
much.
So it's only going to get better is what you're saying.
This is my point. I never understood when people are like, well, what if he plays a league average bat? I go, what has he ever shown you that he's going to be a league average bat? The defense is awesome for a fourth outfielder. Mm-hmm. It's Jerrod Dyson without wheels. He's not even fast.
When do they eject? Or do they eject?
They should have last year.
Are they so? Hey, they wanted to see if he could play center. He can play center. They didn't say anything about can he play center and swing the bat like a center fielder.
Dyron Blanco is the same.
I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing more Dyron Blanco in there.
He's 27.
Yeah.
It's not. He's 23.
I have a hard time imagining that they're going to eject in April, unless they lose six or seven in a row and he can never get it going because. Honestly, as much as I hate to say it, if the Royals keep winning on this trend and you look up and they're, 18-13 and Kyle Isbell's still not hitting, they may attribute some of their success to his defense in center field. They could.
Yeah, I agree. I think they would.
That's why I just fans aren't going to want to hear it. But if they're winning, they're not going to hit the eject button 30 games into the year.
I also wonder, if he struggles like this and Renfro continues to struggle... And Garcia continues to struggle. like, who's the most likely that you're taking out of your lineup to put somebody in? I know they love Isbell in center field, but who's waiting to come? Like, Drew Waters is OPSing almost 1,000 right now in AAA. It's not the big leagues. Maybe he comes up and, you know, is just barely better than Isbell, but not as good a defense. But at some point, if he keeps swinging like this and hitting extra base hits and getting on base and playing center field for AAA every game, at some point you do have to examine, are you a better team by bringing Drew Waters up to play a lesser center field, but you get a better bat and hopefully better base running? Because that was absurd on Saturday.
Why do we act like Drew Waters is this bum center fielder? He's a very good defensive.
Yeah. No,
he's
I don't think he sucks.
He's not as good as Kyle Isbell, but like, even if you look at some of the underlying analytical numbers, pretty damn good.
Yeah,
five runs, 93rd percentile with a better bat.
He did get pulled though last week for a manager decision, so that's
Eaton.
Not.
So was he loafing or they brought in Eaton?
He was out the next night too, so it wasn't like was dogging it to first. There had to have been a bigger deal
on.
There.
Something going on. He's played every game since then, but yeah, he did, which is I think only two. He's played every game since then. It's one game. Show me the lie. Where's the lie in that? He got pulled from a game and got benched, but he returned to the lineup and he's been there ever since. It's been two innings. That's what I'm saying. We'll see. I'm getting close. I know it's April still for another 8 days or whatever, but I'm getting closer to ejecting. Saturday night sent me over the edge.